answer the question for her. You know that scene in Willy Wonka where Veruca Salt loses her mind over the golden goose? Well, Brody is the golden goose, and Sayla has just realized he's unavailable to her, and she's pissed. Her eyes nearly glow with rage, and then, just as quickly, she schools her expression. I have no idea what I should do, so I just keep walking past Sayla standing in the doorway and straight down the hall to my office. I don't look back at Brody, I don't acknowledge any of my coworkers. I just jump on my computer and start following up on emails. I'm running through a million possible scenarios in my mind. Will she fire me? Surely that's illegal or something. I didn't really do anything wrong, did I? Maybe she'll just scream. It'll be unpleasant, but I've been there before. And if I just stay quiet and let her get it out. The door to my office clicks shut, and Sayla is standing in front of it wearing a beautiful Gucci dress and an ugly expression. Is this how you thought you'd work your way to the top then? On your back? Her words are a physical blow, a sucker punch to my stomach that pushes all the air from my lungs. I look up, expecting her glare, only to find a totally controlled expression on her face, as if getting worked up over me is beneath her. She stands there without speaking. Is she waiting for some kind of response? I shake my head slowly, and finally I find my voice. I didn't. Do I look like an idiot? This isn't anything new. The scenario has played out a million times before, but usually the girls doing it are a bit more obvious. I'm actually a little impressed. You pretend to be sweet and innocent, when really, you're just scheming like all the rest. I don't want to listen to her. I want to get up and run away, but I'm frozen in my seat. I will not cry. I will not cry. I will not cry. Ma'am, I give up the act, Brinkley. No one's buying it. You saw a meal ticket, and he saw another cheap lay. She snarls viciously, and it's the first break in her composure since she walked in the room. Another? I squeak. Sayla's face softens the slightest bit while she considers me, and then morphs completely into concerned. Oh, sweetie, don't tell me. You thought you were special? It's the most popular girl in school voice, the one she uses on the SSE team when she wants to make them feel like her best friend. Let me guess, you're different from all the others, right? He made you feel pretty and interesting, and you thought maybe the two of you had a future. Her voice sounds kind, but the words are intentionally sharp. My eyes blur with tears, so I stare down at my hands. I can't have her watch me cry. It was only one date. But he did make me feel special. Now I just feel stupid. I don't answer, but then I don't really need to. You really are naive, aren't you, sweetie? Finally, I find my voice enough to squeak. We're just friends. She takes two steps forward until she's looming over me, eating up all the air in the little office. Ah, but perception is everything, Brinkley. I'm sure people already assume the worst. I don't want, she interrupts me. Do you want to keep your job? My head snaps up. Of course I do. Then you have a choice to make. I won't allow the reputation of my firm to be tarnished by your indiscretion. You will have no further contact with anyone from Barker Ash, professionally or otherwise. If I find out about any kind of relationship, even a purely platonic one, I'll be forced to let you go. Do you understand? I can't believe any of this is happening, and I can't believe I made such a fool of myself that even Sayla, who doesn't seem to care about anyone, is concerned for me. I nod slowly. She seems mollified by my response and turns to go, but at the last second, she looks back. She starts to speak, and with every word her tone changes. It becomes hateful. And Brinkley, I'm rarely this explicit with employees, but since you seem to be slow on the uptake, let me make myself perfectly clear. This is your only warning. If you disregard it, I won't just fire you. I will ruin you. I stare at her in wide-eyed shock. No one has ever spoken to me like this in my life, and I'm paralyzed. I have no idea how to react. I know what you all say about me behind my back. I'm a crazy bitch, right? She bends down, nearly in my face. But I promise you, you don't want to see how far I can take that title. Then she straightens herself up, smooths out her dress, and leaves my office with the door clicking quietly shut behind her, like she was never there at all. For a minute, I just stare at the closed door, too shocked to move. I knew she'd be upset, but I never thought she'd imagine I was sleeping with Brody, or that I'd do something like that to get ahead. Is that what girls in LA do? Is that what girls in LA do with him? Is that all I am? Just the latest conquest? I cover my face with my hands and let go of the tears I've been holding in. I don't understand this game, and I'm not sure how to play when I don't even know the rules. I will ruin you. Sayla's words repeat on a loop in my head. Even if I don't understand anything else, I know she means it. She's done it to McKenna. She's absolutely ruthless. But I don't know what I'm supposed to do. How am I supposed to keep working for her when she clearly hates me? But I can't leave. She'll probably see that as a personal attack. My phone starts ringing, and I know who it is before I grab it. Just the same, seeing Brody's name on the screen makes my stomach plummet. I hit ignore and silent and shove the phone to the bottom of my bag. I don't know what I'm going to say to him, but I know I don't have the courage to say it right now, and I can't have the conversation with Sayla nearby. I can only focus on one thing at a time. Right now, that thing is my ability to stop crying. I swipe a tissue under my eyes and take a few deep breaths. I turn on the Frankie Valli station on Pandora, because no one can be sad listening to Frankie Valli. And I remind myself, for the 100th time, that I've come too far to fail now. Once my hands stop shaking and my heart rate slows down, I open up my email and get back to work. I spend the next several days sick to my stomach, waiting for more fallout from Sayla. But maybe she feels confident in the level of fear she's inflicted because she's gone back to being her regular, disdainful self. We never mention Barker Ash again. Brody sends me several text messages and leaves a handful of voicemails, all of which I delete without opening. The more I think about it, the stupider I feel. Of course he was interested. He told me himself that I was different. For someone who'd probably grown tired of the same easy women, my inexperience would seem like a fun new distraction. Or maybe he did think I was trying to sleep my way to the top like all the others, and that this is all some kind of game we were playing together. The whole idea really upsets me. If I'm being honest with myself, I really liked Brody. And even though it was naive, I thought he really liked me too. So whenever I start thinking about it, I open up a timeline or reconfirm a delivery or answer another email in far more detail than is necessary. At night, I have trouble sleeping, and when I lie in bed too long, I keep crying. So I mostly try not to go to bed. I work nearly around the clock and thank God for Sundance more than once because there's plenty of work to do to keep me busy. On Wednesday morning, I finish packing my suitcase for my afternoon flight to Salt Lake City, and I head into the bathroom to finish my hair and makeup. I give myself one brief, sad moment to acknowledge how thin my face looks and how dark the circles are under my eyes. Don't be dramatic, Landon. You should be ecstatic. You're working a film festival. I give myself a mental pep talk and pull out the under-eye concealer to cover up the worst of it. What's going on with you? Max demands from the doorway. She's in her disheveled morning glory and is glaring at me through the smudge of last night's makeup. I'm just getting ready for the airport. My flight is this afternoon. Bullshit. She barks so loudly that I jump. You've been avoiding me all week, and Miko too, and Brody for that matter. I don't want to talk about him. I keep applying my makeup and refuse to make eye contact. Maybe if I act like I'm nonchalant, she'll leave me alone. You think I want to talk about him with you? She sighs, annoyed. He keeps bugging me about how you are. He says you won't return his calls. Max, I swear on all that is holy if you don't stop talking. My voice starts to vibrate with anger. Anger is good. Anger I can handle. Because at least if I'm angry, I'm not crying. Then tell me what's going on, she yells. And because I'm angry now, I yell louder. Oh yeah, because you're so forthcoming about all your stuff, I glare at her. It's not the same thing. No, you're right. Your secret was much worse because it was dangerous. You never tell me anything, and the only reason I did find out was because I found you in a fucking coma on the kitchen floor. I never curse. Never. And I can't believe I just screamed that at her. My hands are shaking, and I look down at them, afraid to see the hurt in her eyes. I just want her to leave me alone. Neither of us speaks for a minute. And when she finally does, her voice is soft in a way I'd never heard. And look what happened to me when I didn't let anyone help. You're my friend, and I should have trusted you with what was going on, just like you should trust me now. Brody says he thinks he got you in trouble at work again. You spent the last week avoiding everyone. You barely sleep, and you don't look like you've had a meal in days. If she said something, or did something, you don't have to work there. You can find another... With each word, my composure slips a little more, until I feel like I might drop to the floor in a blubbering heap. I interrupt her with the line I've been telling myself over and over for the last couple of days. I've been busy this week. Just need to get through Sundance and everything will be fine. Maybe when I get back, we can have drinks or... Landon. Concern fills the single word all the way to the brim. I'm worried about you. We all are. I can handle her scowls, her bad moods, even her anger. But Max being so sweet, talking to me softly like I'm a skittish animal, it's gonna make me start bawling for sure. And I just finished my eye makeup. I give her my best beauty pageant smile and hope she can't tell how fake it is. Don't be silly. I'm doing great. I throw the blush brush into my makeup bag and then gather the whole thing up along with my toiletry case and scoot past her to my room. Both bags go into my suitcase and I zip up in my big winter coat and head to the front door in under 2 minutes. It is the first time in my life I'm traveling with my makeup only half finished and my hair in a bun. But I get out the door before Max can ask any more questions. When I wheel my carry-on up to the gate at the airport, Miko is waiting there. She's wearing a black parka bigger than she is, her gold headphones, and dark sunglasses even though she's inside a building. As I walk over, she pulls off her headphones and hands me one of the two coffees in her hands. What kind of coffee is this? I let my shoulder bag slink to the floor next to my suitcase. It's the cheer up because you're starting to freak me out kind, she teases. My smile crumbles. I can't handle another altercation this morning. Don't get upset. She touches my sleeve lightly. Max said you wouldn't talk to her, so you're going to start in on me? So now I'm back to being mean to my friends, who are really only trying to be nice to me. Hey, just talk to me. What's going on? She asks quietly. I look around the gate that is slowly filling up with passengers and more than a few members of the SSE team. I don't want to have this conversation ever, but especially not in the JetBlue terminal with my coworkers around. Please, I squeak. Please, I just want to get through this week. I promise it'll get better after. I promise I'm going to cheer up and get sleep and stop living off coffee. I promise we'll have fun and I'll be the absolute laugh of the party. I smile weakly. Just please, don't make me talk about it now, okay? Miko looks me over pensively. Maybe she can see how close I am to the edge of tears, because she finally nods. Okay, I won't ask any more. But you better find that sunny disposition I know and love, because this week is going to suck enough already. If we don't have your eternal optimism to keep us warm, I don't know what we'll do. She smiles at me, and this time, I'm able to return it without much effort. I'd never get through the next 10 days like I'd gotten through the last several. If I'm going to keep it together, I have to find the positive in this situation. Producing an exclusive lounge at Sundance is a dream come true, and I'm going to find a way to enjoy the opportunity I've been given. Landing in Utah the first time you go to Sundance is sort of anticlimactic. In the weeks leading up to the festival, you spend so much time stressing and worrying and planning for every possible event disaster scenario that you expect to walk into utter chaos. So when you arrive in Salt Lake City, and it's just a moderately sized city in the middle of snowy mountains, you get lulled into a false sense of security by the time you leave the very same airport on the way back out of town, you fully understand just how badly you've been duped. Walking through the airport that first day, you believe the whole trip will be as easy and wholesome as the Southwestern-themed souvenirs in the gift shop. Departing through that same terminal, you know the truth about the soul-sucking nightmare it is to produce film festival parties. But by that point, it's too late. We drive from Salt Lake City up to Park City in a rented minivan that calls for more than one joke about soccer moms and the sweet sorts of perks of being SSE lackeys. Chadwick drives us through the canyon, since he'd grown up in Colorado, and says we're all babies for being afraid of a little snow. The little snow covers every bit of ground and falls in a steady flurry all through the hour-long drive, and when we finally arrive in town, I am shocked by how tiny it is. The festival doesn't officially start until Saturday, and we've arrived a couple days early to finish setup, but it is already a crush of delivery trucks and people hustling in and out of the little storefronts that line the main street. "It's so packed," I say, looking at the activity. "Wait till Saturday," Miko tells me. "This is nothing." We drive through the quaint little streets and finally pull up in front of the rented house the staff is sharing on a hill above town. The SSE staff, consisting of 8 people, with the exception of Selah, who's staying at the Waldorf along with the clients, is sharing this modern-looking log cabin for the next 10 days. Our house is a quick walk into town and boasts a hot tub and a game room, all a huge upgrade from last year's property, according to the rest of the team. They'd also told me it had been an act of God and an incredibly big budget to find any place to rent with so little lead time. Evidently, most places book out 6 months in advance, and whatever hotel rooms are left cost 4 times what they would during any other time of the year. As soon as I step out of the van into the driveway, I am grateful for my new snow boots. The snow comes up above my ankle. Holt had worked out more than one deal so that we all got a new pair of sorrel boots. All she had to do was mention which space we were producing, and she'd been able to snag cold weather gear for everyone on the team. I chose a pair that is cherry red, with a white toe and a tan furry trim across the top, because I still want a little color to balance out our eternally dreary wardrobe requirements. In the house, little signs of habitation are everywhere. Taylor and 2 other production guys had arrived a couple days ago to oversee the unloading of the trucks from L.A. The big kitchen is clean, and someone has already made a grocery run because one part of the center island is a tidy little collection of various snack foods. On the other counter, next to a coffee pot, are enough kinds of beer, wine, and liquor to throw a block party. I pointed out to Miko, "Looks like someone is planning for a good time." She laughs at me. "Believe me, you will never need a happy hour as badly as you do here. Plus, Utah's really weird about liquor. You have to go to this special store to buy it, and they look at you all judgy and weird and make everyone show their IDs even if they're not the ones buying. It's a total pain. We usually stock up at the beginning of the week so we don't have to deal again." Ah, makes sense. We wander around, checking out everything from the beautiful view out the floor-to-ceiling windows in the living room to the coveted game room. Finally, we search upstairs until we find an unoccupied room with 2 double beds. The house has 5 bedrooms, which means that most of us are going to share, but I don't mind bunking with Miko. It just makes it feel even more like summer camp. I've just thrown my bag down on the bed closest to the window when Revere pokes his head in. "First crisis!" he sings to us. "What happened?" I grab my shoulder bag with all my perfectly organized binders and permits in triplicate. "Oh, let's see." He leans against the door jamb. "Davy's floral delivery showed up, and it's all wrong. Tay says he's already gotten a parking ticket because one of the drivers forgot to keep his load-in permit on hand, and while they have the down inserts, they can't find the custom pillow covers for the lounge setups." "Which pillow covers?" I'd had to rush order 7 custom pillow cover orders from multiple parties. It had been a nightmare. "All of them." Revere winks at me. "Oh, man," I sigh. "May as well head over there." Miko grabs her own bag and walks to the door. I follow her and Revere out. We tramp out into the snow one after another, and I walk towards the van. "Brinkley, parking is a total pain. It'll be 1,000,000 times easier to just walk," Chadwick explains. Oh, right. I pull the hood of my parka over my head and move towards the road. One by one, we trudge through the snow and the slippery sidewalks into the chaos of our event space, out of the frying pan and into the fire. Our venue is a two-story real estate building owned by realtors who have packed up and left town for the 3 weeks around the festival. Most of the spaces on Main Street do the same thing. The rent they earn from their little storefronts during Sundance is the best profit they'll make all year long. The production team, along with a crew of hired local guys, have cleared the space and rebuilt it to Miko's specifications. Now it doesn't resemble an office at all. Instead, it looks like a sleek, comfortable daytime lounge that can change into a sleek, comfortable nighttime lounge with the proper lighting and some well-placed pop-up bars. Unfortunately, the mysteriously missing pillow covers never surface, which is why I find myself on Friday afternoon in the small upstairs conference room of our space, creating an alternative with Walmart shams and some iron-on printer paper. It is tedious work, but Selah is bringing the clients in for a walkthrough in the evening before we open tomorrow, so I have no choice but to finish. Fueled by a lunch of Skittles and Diet Coke and pop music pumping from my phone into the room, I have a false sense of energy. The door behind me opens and closes, but I don't look up. This little room is our staff satellite office, and people have been in and out all day. You didn't text me back. I nearly dropped the iron, but managed to set it down gently before turning around. Brody is wearing jeans and snow boots with a cream-colored fisherman sweater. His style is perfect and effortless, but his smile is unsure. I'd known I'd have to see him at some point on this trip, but I just refused to let myself think about it. Well, he's here now. I need to be adult and professional and deal with him. I take a deep breath. Mr. Ashton. Brody. His smile is gone, replaced by the frustration in his voice. You know my name. Why are you calling me that? I think it's better if you go, and you shouldn't contact me anymore. I'm sorry if I gave you the impression that I... My voice cracks, and I look up at the ceiling. Landon, what the hell are you talking about? He takes 3 steps, eating up the space between us, and then he is right in front of me. He smells so good, earthy and fresh, just like the snowy mountains outside. I know that doesn't really make sense, but it's all I can focus on, and my head is foggy with it. I need to get him out of the room with as little emotion as possible. I need to explain to him the professional ramifications of us being friends, because that is the only part I can talk about. The other part? The one in which I am either a slut sleeping her way to the top or a new conquest for a player is the thing that's had me cry myself to sleep through most of the past week. I definitely can't talk about that with him. It was inappropriate to have seen you outside the office, and I apologize for whatever impression I might have given you. Going forward, Selah will be the direct contact for our Barker Ash events. I look away from him. This is crazy. He grabs for my hand, but I back away, bumping into the conference table behind me. She can't tell you who you're allowed to see outside of work. You understand that, don't you? I'm not a client of SSC. In fact, I've already told Selah this is the last event she'll do with us. I don't agree with the way she does business, and truthfully, I just don't like her as a person. Not even our buyout minimums are worth risking association with some of her shadier practices. What is he talking about? I'm surprised to hear this because she hasn't mentioned it at all. But I try not to let it show. So there's nothing wrong with us hanging out. Honestly, the only inappropriate part of this whole situation was her reaction to it. Come on. He grabs my hand before I can pull it away, and it feels so good it's almost painful. You look so sad. It's not like you at all. Let's sneak out of here for a quick lunch. I'm starving, and you can't survive on candy alone. He eyes the empty Skittles bag on the floor next to my finished pillows. I'll even make you pay, so it's not date-like at all. He smiles at me, and that grin is gold and glitter and everything magic. And for one single moment, I consider letting him hold my hand all the way down the stairs. I let myself have that single breath to dream about what it would be like to go to lunch at some cozy little bistro as the snow falls on Main Street outside the window. And then I remember Selah telling me how naive I am to believe I am special, and how many other girls Brody has taken on similar lunches, and lastly, what she would do to me if she ever found out. I remove my hand from his and watch his face fall. "Please leave," I whisper, miserable. "This is all I've ever wanted to do, and if she finds you here, I'll never get an opportunity like this again." He nods slowly and gives me a tight smile as he moves towards the door. Just as he reaches it, he spins back around, and the look on his face is one I've seen before, that night at 25. Like he is fighting with himself about whether or not to say something. "You are smart and ambitious, and I absolutely respect working hard to get somewhere. But Landon, you are too sweet to work for someone like this. She's harsh and fake, and if you let her, she'll rub out all the best parts about you. If you want to work in events, there are a ton of different opportunities at one of our properties. I can make some calls." He is so earnest in the offer, but it's exactly the kind of thing Selah alluded to when she said I'd use him to get ahead. And maybe that's why he's doing it, because it suits his plans too. I spin back around to the pillow I had been working on. "I appreciate your offer, but if you'll excuse me, I have a ton of work to do before the walkthrough." He doesn't say another word, and I never see his face, so I don't know how or if my words affect him. I stare down at the logo in front of me as the door opens, and then closes again behind me. Chapter 22. "How you doing, Brinks?" Taylor calls to me over the music. It's the third day of the festival, our fifth in Park City, and the fourth party we've thrown in the last 2 days. But not before we'd left the venue at 3 a.m., and the alarm on my phone went off at 7 this morning so we could open up the venue as a daytime lounge. It is now nearly midnight, and I'm fairly sure that a constant stream of caffeine and emergency packets are the only things keeping me upright. I'm hanging in there. I smile at him as he removes his big jacket and runs a hand through his hair to get the snowflakes out. "What's tonight's drama?" He leans against the hallway wall next to me in the near dark. Once a party is off and running, the latter part of the evening just turns into lurking somewhere in the shadows and babysitting the room in case there's trouble. "Let's see. The landlord came by and tried to sneak his teenage daughter in again to get pictures with celebrities. Security stopped him at the door, and he was really annoyed. I had to kindly explain that it was a private event, and even if he owned the building, he couldn't just waltz inside. It didn't go well. I ended up giving him 3 of the VIP gift bags, which finally calmed him enough to leave. What else? There was an issue with capacity. We had to turn away a bunch of people. The personal publicists were freaking out, but I think it was mostly their friends who were trying to get in, so whatever. At some point, I commandeered a plate of appetizers from Revere, but I put it down for a second and a busser cleared it and I'm starving." I smile over at him. "How about yourself?" "Well, first of all," he says, reaching into the pocket of his jacket and tossing to me a bag of pretzels. "It's not gourmet, but..." "Thank you," I beam at him. "You're always feeding me." I'm already opening the bag to pop one in my mouth. "You're welcome. Now as for me, I've just spent the last hour huddled outside the back exit helping Rodriguez fix the security camera." "I didn't know that came under your purview," I smile through a mouthful of pretzel. Purview is another one of Selah's favorite words. "It isn't. I mostly just held the flashlight for him. It had to be done because we're contractually obligated to have one for security purposes. It was just our good luck that it decided to crap out after sundown and during a snowstorm." "I've had a ton of that sort of luck this week myself. And have you started counting down the days yet until you get to fly out of here?" He reaches and snags a pretzel for himself. 5 more to go," I say, miserable, and he laughs. "But tomorrow night we're off, and I plan on sleeping for at least 12 hours straight." "You haven't gone out with us once yet. Tomorrow night is perfect." He gives me a sidelong glance. "There's a really good Thai place down the street, and then there's a couple of parties we could go to." "Yes to the Thai, but as takeout only. As for the parties, thanks for the offer, but I won't even pretend to be interested. I don't think I've ever been this tired in my life." I look down at my watch and grumble, and then hand him the bag in my hand. "Here, you finish these. I have to go make sure the hipster DJ got his cocktail. Part of his rider was a fresh gimlet every 45 minutes. At least he gets points for an original drink choice. The best part is that I serve it to him in a to-go coffee cup so no one knows he's drinking alcohol. Apparently, he's like 5 minutes out of rehab. Ah, Brinks, you sound jaded already. He laughs at my pained expression and bumps me sweetly with his shoulder. I can't help it. I watched one of America's sweethearts scream at a barista this morning because we ran out of soy milk. And I'm pretty sure that one of MTV's teen moms was dancing on the bar earlier. And if she's here, Taylor, who's watching her baby? I say wearily. And the worst of it is, I'm too tired to care. I promise I'll go back to being appalled by it all once we're back at sea level. I turn to walk down the hallway and he calls after me. Now you know why we all hate Sundance. I can hear his laughter, and I consider turning around to stick my tongue out at him, but I'm too exhausted and can't work up the necessary energy. The next night, I let everyone talk me into going with them to Thai on Main for dinner. I've long since passed the tired phase and am floating somewhere in a sort of numb, giggly state, but so are the rest of them. We make for quite a group when we finally snag a table by the bar. Everyone else orders drinks, but I'm positive I'll fall asleep in my curry if I have a drop of alcohol. I opt for hot tea, which is perfect for my scratchy throat, and I share Gang Khao Wan with Miko. It's so spicy it makes my nose run, but that's a nice change from the stuffy, so I don't care. Apparently, another side effect of Sundance, everyone working there spends the entirety of the trip fighting off various forms of illness. After dinner, we trudge back up the hill to the house so people can change into their going-out clothes, and Miko and I can change into our staying-in clothes. I'm snuggled up with a box of double-stuffed Oreos on the sofa in the game room while Miko tries to figure out how to work the DVD player in front of me. What are we watching? Taylor walks by me and steals a handful of cookies, stretching himself out on the love seat catty corner. He's wearing sweatpants and an old concert tee. Clearly not his going-out clothes. I thought you were all headed to a party. I break apart a cookie so I can eat the icing out of the middle. He shrugs. Movie night sounded better. What's the choice this evening? Miko beams at him as she plops down next to me. Twilight. And just so you know, it's not even the fourth one when they had a big budget. This is the very first one where their makeup doesn't even go down onto their necks, and Kristen Stewart does that whole exorcism thing before Edward sucks the venom out. Sure you want to stay? She taunts. The acting is pretty terrible, I warn him solemnly. If it's so bad, then why are you guys watching it? Because it's a classic, and neither of us has the brain capacity to watch anything deeper. And because Rob Pattinson is pretty and will make us feel better, Miko tells him. Sounds good to me. Taylor snags a blanket hanging over the back of the sofa and wraps it around himself. The movie starts up, complete with the random piano music and the wide shots of the forest. He teases us for the first 20 minutes about what kind of adults watch something this terrible. But then he quiets down, and by the time Edward saves Bella from the street thugs, he's incensed. Wait, why is he being so weird to her in the car? He demands suddenly. Because the smell of her blood bothers him. He's a vampire, Miko says, annoyed. I'm not sure why she thinks he's such a catch. He's basically rude to her all the time. He grabs a bowl of popcorn from the coffee table and shoves some in his mouth. He's not rude to her. He's afraid he'll accidentally kill her. He has to keep himself in check constantly. Can you even imagine? Miko screeches in exasperation. This is one of the great literary love stories, and you know what? Stop talking. If you want to watch, you have to quiet down. She scolds him like he's a little boy, and I'm laughing so hard by the end of her tirade, I'm in tears. The two of them continue to bicker about plot points and soundtrack music, and this is the happiest I've felt in weeks. I lay my head on the arm of the sofa, content that I'll make it through the rest of this festival in one piece. I'm asleep before Bella even gets to watch them play vampire baseball. The next 4 days fly by in a blur of party production, frigid temperatures, and sleep deprivation. On the plus side, I now totally understand why people who fight wars together remain close even after they return home. There's something about spending intense, stressful time with other people that bonds you forever. And I can safely say that the members of the SSE team working this week will be lifelong friends. Taylor wasn't kidding when he said that Sayla was smart enough to hire good people. I've seen evidence of it over and over. Every single person on our team is the epitome of grace under pressure. I've watched Davies create 39 centerpieces by herself with only half her expected flower order. I've watched the production team change our space over 3 times in one day, one during a snowstorm. I've seen Revere remember the food likes, dislikes, and allergies of at least 100 VIPs and never once break a sweat when they complained or asked for something different. Probably most impressive is that everyone has managed to keep a good attitude despite how tired we all are. Between Revere's bawdy jokes and Miko coming up with endless games of Would You Rather, we've managed to laugh our way through most of the long days on site. The only tense moments happen when Sayla comes in, but since she spends most of her time whining and dining the clients or skiing with her friends, those moments are few and far between. We're nearing the end of a cast dinner on the second to last night in town when Miko and Revere find me in the back room sorting gift bags. "Tonight we're drinking," Miko declares. "Hold on. 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, I say, counting the bags. I look over at Chadwick, who's been helping me get them ready. "Can you take them down to the lobby area and put them on that table we set up?" "Sure thing." I turn back to Miko and Revere, both grinning like naughty children. "We are drinking tonight," Miko enunciates each word. "I don't know." I grab some lip gloss from my pocket and swipe it on. "Tomorrow's one of our biggest events." "Yes, but it's our final event. And tomorrow night, we go too late to celebrate. This is our last night here that we'll be off early enough to do anything." I smirk at them both and head back out to the party area. They follow closely behind, extolling the virtues of one last hurrah. "You haven't had a single drink the entire week," Miko whines. "That's not even human." "I've been too tired, and I've been fighting a cold, and I've had to get up early every morning." "You don't have to get up early tomorrow," Revere sings. "We don't have to be on site until noon." "And we've already invited people," Miko adds. "What people, exactly? You know we have a security deposit on the rental, and if anything happens..." "Mom, stop freaking out. It's like 8 extra people, not the makings of a rave," Miko barks. "Now then, we're done here, so we're going to do a run for snacky poos and more wine." "Did you already have a drink?" I look closer into her eyes, but it's too dim to see anything clearly. "Neither here nor there, miss," Revere says haughtily. "You guys finish up quickly, and we'll see you back at the house, okay?" "Fine." As soon as I turn around, I feel a swift smack on my bum. I whirl around, but they're both running madcap back down the hallway to escape any retribution. Those two are trouble. I smile and walk back out to the lower floor of the space. We've transformed it into an elegant dining room for tonight's 40-person party. I straighten the custom napkins on the bar and return a few abandoned wine glasses to Scullery. The cast movie is premiering tonight at 9, and it's already 8:40 p.m., so they are starting to make their way out in groups to make it to the theater on time. I chat with the DJ one last time about lowering the music and playing something really mellow, the event planner equivalent of flashing the lights on and off. When I turn around again, Sayla has entered the space with the Riverton group. Behind them are the Ashton brothers. She is guiding Diego around the party, using the opportunity to introduce him to some of the celebrities, I'm sure in a bid to remind him how well-connected she is. I don't want to watch her work the room any more than I want Brody to spot me, so I sneak out before they notice me. I swipe my jacket from the partition I'd hidden it behind and slip out front to check in with security. When I open the door, hundreds of flashes fill the air in the split second between me stepping out and the paparazzi realizing I'm not anyone famous. I step over to two men who have been our door guys all week as the flashes come to an abrupt halt. "Joey," I call to the bigger of the two. "Revere says he left plates of food for your team back in the kitchen. They'll keep them warm for you. Just head back when we're done here and grab them." "Thanks, Brinkley. We really appreciate it." I turn back to go inside. "You're lucky, too," I call. "I think they had extra filet, so you're living large tonight, gentlemen." I laugh at their happy expressions. Every single event we work has security, and the easiest way to their hearts is through free dinners. Just as I turn to grab the door, it opens inward. The flashes go off again, but die off when the Riverton team steps out. Sayla follows behind them, ahead of Brody and Liam. I cringe at the vision of Sayla in her stiletto boots, tights, cashmere sweater, and fur vest paired against me in my dirty snow boots, ponytail, and practically no makeup since I'd sweated it all off long since. I turn back to the guys. Joey, can you escort them to their cars, please? Absolutely. Right this way, Miss Smith. Joey offers Sayla an arm, which she clutches rather than fall off her 6-inch heels. Honestly, what idiot wears those boots in the snow? I turn back for the door. Brody gives me a hopeful grin, and Liam's face brightens in recognition. Hey, how are you? Excuse me, I mumble quickly and duck back inside the space. Great. Now I'm being openly rude to everyone. Ugh. I walk slowly back to toss my jacket in its hiding place and start overseeing strike of the party. I decide right then that Miko is right. We are drinking tonight. There she is! Miko squeals from her perch in the middle of the kitchen island. The main room is full of people, but true to her word, there can't be more than 20 total. There is music and lots of loud, happy conversation, but nobody appears to be doing anything that might get them, or us, into trouble. Here I am, I say in agreement with Miko. Let me just drop my stuff off in the room and I'll be right back. I jog up the stairs to our shared bedroom and change into clothes that don't smell like the food we served at dinner. I redo my pony, pull on a pair of Uggs, and apply gloss. Back down in the kitchen, Miko, Chadwick, and Revere are lining up shots of Jameson and cackling like hyenas. Clearly, they've been drinking since they left me at the venue. Come on, come on, come on, come on. It's your turn, Miko croons. All right, I grab a shot and throw it back without hesitation. You drink like a guy, Revere slurs. Or a pirate, Chadwick agrees. I laugh. Either way, I just want to buzz as fast as physically possible. I grab another shot. Hey, careful there, slugger. Taylor comes up next to me and stops the forward motion of the shot by grabbing my wrist. The altitude will mess with you if you've never been up here before. You get drunk a lot easier, so you might give it a minute before your next one. He must have just taken a shower, because his hair is wet, and he's changed into an old Rolling Stone shirt. You can have this one, then. I hand him my shot, and he drinks it for me. And I'll just get the next. I grab the next in line and swallow it before he can stop me. The group assembled around the kitchen gives me a round of applause, during which I stop to curtsy. You're going to feel that tomorrow. Yes, but at least I won't think about anything tonight. I smile at him as the whiskey starts sizzling its way through my veins. Who wants to play I've Never? Revere asks, sloshing around the dregs of the Jameson bottle. I do. I laugh, because right about now, I want to drink and be silly and not think about my crappy boss or the way Brody's face looked when I ignored him tonight. So we play games, and we drink a ton, and I end up teaching Revere and Chadwick the first 8 counts of my favorite routine from junior high cheer squad. The last thing I sort of remember is a group of us creating suits out of trash bags so that we can make snow angels without getting wet. Chapter 23. As soon as my eyes catch the smallest bit of daylight, I wince and slam them shut again. I reach a hand up to rub the clumpy mascara out of my right eye, but keep them shut until I can assess my wounds. My head is pounding, probably because I didn't drink any water last night. I remember that I did eat my weight in Costco pizza that someone showed up with last night. It must have absorbed the worst of the liquor, because I don't feel as terrible as I should. I slowly open my eyes to test out the level of my hangover and see Taylor's head asleep on the pillow next to mine. Oh my God! I spring upright in bed with a yelp. Taylor jumps up too. What's going on? He's wearing a rumpled white t-shirt and pajama bottoms. I look down at myself, wearing only his back in black t-shirt. Oh my God! I cry louder this time. What did I do? What did we do? I don't remember anything after the trash bag snow angels and I'm... Calm down, Brinks. It's not as big of a deal as you're making it out to be. He flops back down on the bed with a yawn. Not that big of a deal! I clutch the blanket and pull it up above my chest. How have I gotten myself here? And with a guy who doesn't even seem that worked up over what happened. How can you say that? I don't do things like this, Taylor. I'm either going to cry or be sick, maybe both. Taylor sits up, suddenly very awake. Brinks, you didn't do anything, I swear. Well, you did a few things that I'll tease you about until the day I die. But we didn't do anything. But why am I in your bed? I ask weakly. Everyone was down in the game room playing pool, and you must have ferreted in here when no one was looking. I came in and found you passed out across the covers, apparently having helped yourself to some pajamas. He gestures at the shirt I'm wearing. You wouldn't wake up, and I was too tired to care, so I just left you here. I can't believe Miko didn't stop me from doing something so stupid, I gripe. Don't be too mad at her. She was the first one who went up to bed, and even if she was awake, I doubt she was sober enough to have kept you in line. Okay, yeah, you're probably right. I look around me, a thought occurring suddenly. But why didn't you sleep somewhere else? You snuck into my bed, he laughs. I'm gentleman enough not to touch you, but not gentleman enough to sleep on the couch just because you want to pull a Goldilocks. The tension in my shoulders eases. You're right. I'm sorry, I'm such an idiot. I run my hand through the rat's nest on my head. Taylor's smile is slow and sleepy. No, you're not an idiot. He reaches out to push a piece of hair behind my ear. You're actually kind of adorable. My breath hitches a little at the gesture because I know what it means. How many girls would kill to be in this position with Taylor right now? He's sweet and funny and completely gorgeous, and I just don't feel excited or nervous or get goosebumps on my skin when he touches me. I look down at my hands nervously. Taylor, he starts to chuckle a little and leans back against the headboard. No, Brinks, don't even say it. I know that tone of voice. Not that I hear it a lot, mind you, but I know what it means. I look up at his kind expression. He really is the best. I'm sorry. I really do care about you so much as a friend. I just don't want to make out with me. He finishes for me. No, I don't. I give him a helpless shrug. And I don't know why either, because you're totally gorgeous. But I don't think makeout sessions are in our future. It really is your loss, he says playfully. Oh, I'm sure it is. I look around for my phone, or my clothes, or something, but I don't see anything helpful. What time is it? Taylor looks at his watch on the nightstand. Just after 10 o'clock. I scoot to the edge of the bed and do another cursory search for my clothes. I don't know where they are either. I tried to find them last night, he says as I hunt. I pull an afghan off the end of the bed. It's an ugly, crocheted mustard color, but it's big enough to wrap around myself like a cloak so I can get upstairs. Lord, I am the worst. I laugh at the idiocy of the situation and wonder if he'll ever let me live this moment down. If you want to meet me in the kitchen, I'll throw actual clothes on and make you some coffee. It's the least I can do. Taylor peels himself out of the bed and slides a t-shirt on. I shouldn't notice how nice his body is, but I do. Someday he's going to make some lucky girl very happy. I keep the afghan draped over my shoulders like a cape and use one hand to hold it in place. The other hand slowly turns the knob on his door, and I listen for a moment to see if anyone else is awake. The house is still, so I'm assuming everyone else is sleeping off last night. Taylor's room is in the basement next to the game room, so we have to trudge up steep steps to the kitchen. Just as I get to the last step up, Taylor accidentally snags the edge of the afghan, which makes me trip, and then he trips, and both of us sort of half tumble into the kitchen laughing. I straighten back up and pull the blanket tight around my shoulder, still snickering. I'm honestly the least graceful person you're likely to meet. My throat clears. I look up at Revere, who's standing in the archway of the kitchen, next to Brody. I look at Taylor, and then back at them, and I'm wearing his t-shirt, and my hair's a mess, and I don't have pants on, and oh my God, this looks so bad. Revere clears his throat again. I'm sorry, Mr. Ashton asked to speak with you, Brinkley, and I thought you were in your room. Brody's face has drained of all its color, I start to say something, but then his features shift, and for one fleeting moment, I see a look of disgust that makes my heart hurt. Excuse me, this was my mistake. Brody turns around and heads back out the way he came. Damn it. I leave Taylor and Revere standing in the kitchen, still gaping at the spot Brody just exited, and I chase after him. I'm wearing an old t-shirt and a mustard-colored blanket. I pick out a random pair of snow boots from next to the front door that end up being two sizes too big, and I run out into the snow. Brody! Brody! He's almost to his car, but he spins back around. Oh, now it's Brody? I'm stumbling through the snow. I nearly crash into him when he comes striding back to me. I'm sorry, I know how it looks, but I... How it looks? It looks like you were in bed with Bennett. Who's your coworker, by the way? He shouts. Which is really confusing because you said we couldn't even be friends because it was unprofessional. I know you have no reason to believe me, but I promise. You promise? He sneers, and I shrink back and hug the blanket tighter around myself. Are we back to pretending then? You're going to play good girl again, and I'm supposed to buy it? I know it's an utterly ridiculous thing to say, but it falls out of my mouth like a plea. I am a good girl. Brody leans closer and points an accusing finger at me. Hard to believe that when the only thing you've got on is his shirt. His face blurs in my vision, and tears start rolling down my cheeks. I'm so damn sick of crying all the time. When did I become this girl? I scrub them away with the edge of the blanket. My brain races to figure out the right thing to say, to make him understand. He's looking at me like he's finally figured out who I really am, and it's disgusting to him. I don't know what to say. He's practically vibrating with anger, and I have to fight the urge to reach out to him. Why are you so upset? I ask in a small voice. That's the question of the day, he says contemptuously. I came over here because I was worried about you. Every time I've seen you this week, you looked upset, and I thought you were having a hard time. I wanted to make sure you were okay, but the joke's on me, right? He's almost yelling by the last sentence. Please don't be angry. Just let me. Brinks, are you okay? I turn to see Taylor standing in the doorway of the house, looking pretty angry. He's clenching his right fist at his side, and I wonder if the bad boy image isn't actually an act after all. I'm fine. Can you give us a minute? I call over. He doesn't look happy about it, but he closes the door. When I turn back, Brody is smirking. You've just got all kinds of men checking up on you, huh? The damsel in distress is a good game. I certainly fell for it. He looks out into the snow for a minute, and when he speaks again, his voice is quiet. The worst of it is, I don't know why I'm so upset. I've been in this scenario plenty of times. I just thought this time, no, I thought you were going to be different. Brody, please listen to me. I'm in this situation and I know how it looks, but it's not my fault. I had too much to drink, but I didn't do anything. I'm pleading. I need him to understand. And that's your thing too, right? You don't do anything. You let Selah control your life and make you miserable and you just take it. You're depressed for weeks and your friends try and help. And you're rude to them, but that's not your fault, right? They should have left you alone. You end up drunk in bed with some guy, but you don't take responsibility for that either. Please. I'm really crying now. I'm not like that. My tears only seem to make him angrier. You're exactly like that. But you know what? I don't get to tell you how to act. You can be whoever you want, but at least take responsibility for it. Stop pretending that your life is just happening to you and that you have no control over it. I can only imagine how pathetic I look sobbing here in the snow, but I can't stop. He's so angry, and each word cuts like a knife. I'm so tired of people being mad at me, but the worst of it is, he's right. I have let Selah boss me around. I was rude to my friends, and I did get drunk and end up in bed with Taylor. What would have happened if it had been someone else's bed? For the first time, I realize how dangerous my actions were last night. I've been so wrong, so much lately. I'm sorry about all of it, and I don't know what I can fix. but I have to make him understand. I can't let him leave here without knowing what really happened. I swallow back more tears and start at the beginning. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have let Selah tell me we couldn't be friends. Brody holds up a hand to stop me. You know what? Don't even worry about it. Really. I don't want you as a friend. He walks away through the snow back to his car and drives all the way down the hill before I can stop crying long enough to go back inside the house. Chapter 24. Okay, so the day started off truly sucky. That's a given. Miko and I are changing out the pillows in the lounge for the last Sundance event. But we're an hour and a half removed from the start of the very last party, and we get to go home tomorrow. These are bright sides, and I think we should focus on them. I told her the whole sordid story while crying and shivering under the blankets from both my bed and hers. I'd finally let her coax me into the shower and down 2 cups of coffee and 3 of the dozen donuts Revere ran out to grab. Apparently, he's on Miko's emergency diet of sugar. I'd spent almost an hour doing my hair and makeup, because everyone knows about the restorative effects of good hair. But I'm still floating in that weird, sensitive place where a slight breeze might make me start crying. But I'm going to hold it together long enough to get through this party. I'm good. I smile at her weakly. I'm just going to get through tonight, and then I'll deal with everything else when I get back. She studies me for a second, and then drops the pillow she'd just stuffed into a new cover. You need more sugar, she says decisively. Wait here. I think I have some sweet tarts in my bag. It stands to reason that the party that night would be our biggest and would present the most issues. Within the first 45 minutes of opening the door, we've reached our 200-person capacity. We still have a line of at least 75 people out front who are screaming about being on the guest list and demanding to be let in. I have to ask at least 3 people to stop smoking inside. Celebrity or not, if they set off the fire sprinklers, I'll have to beat them to death. A former boy band member swaps an entire bottle of Riverton and is halfway through it when I have to ask Joey to escort him out for belligerence. It's been a hellish night, and I haven't stopped running from one fire to another, but the party's packed with A-list celebrities, and there are at least 50 paparazzi out front. Everyone involved is going to get amazing press out of this. As tough as it is, it is nice to end the week on a success. Did you see this email from Selah? Revere asks, as I stare dubiously at a group of unruly guys who keep causing trouble at the bar. About Brian Paul coming in? I smile at him. Yeah, I had a lounge area cleared for them. She said they were 15 minutes out and coming in through the back. Aren't you excited? I thought you loved pop music, and it doesn't get any bigger than him. He winked at me. I liked his music better in the beginning. Now he's turned sort of douchey? I laugh at the pristine Revere using such a common word. Exactly. I guess it doesn't matter, though, since I can't imagine anyone who would garner more press. I'm sure Selah is salivating at securing his presence. Oh, do you think he'll have Katie with him? Katie is a former child star turned wild child, and she and Brian are forever having blowouts in public. The tabloids go crazy for them. I don't know. Are they on or off right now? Who knows? I throw my hands up. Can you have the chef wait to fire the apps for their table until we know how many are in the party? I can only imagine how big the entourage is for someone like him. Already on it, girl. I'm just going to check in with the kitchen. Will you text me when they come in? Will do. I'm distracted. The rowdy guys are trying to create some sort of tequila bomb with a Riverton shot and Red Bull. This won't end well. I call for security on my mouthpiece. They're going to have to come deal with this group before it gets out of hand. I've just finished the unpleasant job of getting the group out of the party when I get word that Brian and Katie are coming in through the back entrance. Odd that Selah would bring them in through there, since I'd assumed she'd want all the press shots she could get. I hustle to meet them and find Selah leading the group through the long hallway with Joey's help. Brian and Katie are both so much shorter than I thought they would be. He is wearing an oversized sweatshirt and a huge beanie with dark Ray-Bans, even though it has to be hard for him to see in the dim party. Katie can't weigh more than 100 pounds. She has on snow boots with fuchsia tights and a matching fur jacket. Honestly, I have sports bras that cover more skin.